I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history podcast created by me, Professor Greg Jackson. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Into the 9 o'clock hour we go. So league meetings in Minneapolis the next couple days. You know what?
Owners, I want to just keep it. Yeah.
Go to Minneapolis for your league meetings in December, all right? That'll impress me. You're going up to Minneapolis in the middle of May.
This time of year, it's probably gorgeous. Actually, my brother was in Minnesota last week.
He's
like,
so
oh my gosh, it's incredible right now.
It really is nice, yeah.
Spring is springing.
That's right. So they got league meetings going on this week, and they're going to take a couple of the proposals that we thought were going to get voted on in March, got tabled till May. And these are big ones. This is as interested as I've been in whether or not a couple of rules changes or procedural changes will get enacted here. The first one is they're voting on the Detroit Lions proposal to change the seeding system in the postseason and base it on record. Division champs would still make the postseason automatically. Four division champs, three wild cards. They would make it automatically, but then those seven teams would be seeded based on their record. And they actually, Seth, used the Texans from last year as an example as to why this rule makes sense. The league is trying to make every game, as many games as it can, relevant. And there's just way too many games for the league's appetite in Week 18 where teams are just resting guys. The games don't mean anything. If this rule were in place last year, the Texans, who had already clinched the four seed, they clinched the division with 3 weeks to go in the season. Yeah. They clinched the four seed by week 18. If this rule were in place last year, then the Texans could have finished anywhere from seeded fourth all the way to seventh. They would have had to. Now they ended up beating Tennessee either way, but they would have had to, or would have felt more compelled to play their starters for more than preseason snaps in that game. The game would have been, and that's just one example, but it was one that got used on a big PowerPoint when they presented this to everybody. Is, hey, look, if the division champs aren't locked into the top four seeds and everything's fluid, then there's a whole lot more games in week 17 and 18 that matter.
I'm personally invested in this on behalf of Will Anderson.
Okay,
and this is why.
Okay,
I was looking at because the Texans play in a weak division. All right, there's no way other way around it.
Yep.
And the Texans, if they played in another division, might have been playing all their starters in that game. I was trying to figure out, like, I've got kind of a list of things that Will Anderson needs to do to become an All-Pro. And one of them is simply just play more snaps. Now, some of that's injury related because he's had these ankle issues. But when you look at his production, has been very good for a guy in his first couple years. He's got to ramp his production up. But he has like 200 fewer pass rushing snaps than Max Crosby. He had over 100 fewer pass rushing snaps than Trey Hendrickson. Those are the two guys who are the all-pro defensive ends this year. So one of my keys for Will Anderson is just to play more snaps this year,
okay,
mostly by staying healthy, but also let's get you playing in a meaningful week 18 game instead of like against you're going to be playing a clown franchise,
right?
But maybe the Texans need to win it. If they've already hemmed up the division, they still got to get that seeding.
That's what it would have been last year. And well, in last year's week 18 game, remember Will Anderson was in street clothes and ended up getting fined for running onto the field. On Derek Barnett's touchdown. Yeah.
He still found a way to make an impact.
That's right. So do you have a feeling, strong feeling, one way or the other on this rule?
I like this a lot.
You
I
do?
Think it makes a lot of sense. Because now, I know the knee-jerk question that I got a few times this weekend when I talked about it was, well, doesn't that make the division title meaningless? No, because you're still guaranteed a playoff spot by winning your division. And then also, it's a tiebreaker in the seeding as well.
It supersedes head-to-head.
Yeah.
You know, like it's a tiebreaker that's super.
It'd be the number one tiebreaker.
It'd be the number one tiebreaker. So if the Texans say, you know, Texans finish 10-7 along with one of the wild card teams, but they beat them it wouldn't matter.
Even if they
had gotten beaten by that team, division champions is the supersedes everything in a tiebreaker. If you're a division champ, you're gonna win whatever tiebreaker. So yeah, so it's no, it still carries a lot of importance. And I think too, maybe more than any other sport, Seth, I think the division championship, I don't know, you tell me, you're a former player, you played in these I feel like there's some animus in division games,
too. Oh, yeah,
too. Like
screw those guys.
Right, way more than baseball and basketball to me. Baseball probably skews closer to football. Basketball, I think there's probably players that don't even know who's in their division. You know what I mean? Like, you just play everybody, and you play a few more division games or whatever, but nobody's bragging about winning the, you know, Southwest Division Championship. The divisions are a huge deal in football, just from a pride standpoint.
Especially because on the OMD line or between wide receivers and defensive backs, you've got grudges against those guys.
Yes,
especially if you played them six times in the last 3 years, and then possibly a playoff game or something. Yeah, you start to there's ill will. Yeah,
ill will.
So ill will versus a team that is standing in your way for a home playoff game. I like it a lot. This makes all the sense in the world, Sean.
You like that one? I like it too. I like it, even though it would have victimized the Texans several times when they've won the division. They've been the four seed, I think, almost every time that they've won the division. They've been in the playoffs eight times, all of them as AFC South champs. This I know.
Well,
3:30 Saturday. I know that's been a staple. I don't know if they've been the four seed every time.
Yeah.
So there's that. So I'm with you. I like that one. The tush push, that is getting voted on this week as well. Do they ban the tush push? Now, not to go super nerdy on this, but they told the Packers who proposed this to kind of go back to the drawing board in March and refine some of the way the proposal was worded.
Yeah, because it was an idiotic the way that. Okay, so Green Bay and Buffalo, oddly, who's really good at the tush push, their whole thrust was it's not safe. And the next question would be, okay, well, what shows that it's unsafe? Nothing at all. There's no statistics that show that it's inherently a dangerous play.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you got then? That's it. Nothing.
So the language in the proposal, according to Albert Breer, is still the same as it was. And I don't know if they mentioned the injury possibilities in there, but the way the rule would be rewritten is the same now as it was in March. So they're going to be voting on the same thing. I don't know what that means. Reportedly, half the teams in the league, 16 of the 32, as of March, were ready to ban the tush push. The question, I guess, is have those 16 teams been able to sway any of the other teams? It would seem, if we're basing it on the public opinions of D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caserio, that the Texans are not a ban the tush push team.
I wonder
they're a find a way to stop it team.
Yeah, if they had wanted to rewrite it, I think the one thing might be just ban. Go back to the way it was for decades in football, which is an offensive player isn't allowed to push the ball carrier at any point. You know, like you can't turn it into a rugby ruck type of situation. Yeah. And I don't like, so if that's not changed, I would have been more in favor of that just because it makes sense. You're not just trying to penalize teams that are good at the tush push. I hate watching the tush push. I think it's boring. And yet, I can't in good conscience say that you need to ban a play from football just because some teams are really good at it. I can't say, am I really going to sit here and act like and pretend it's a safety measure or something when in fact, no, some teams are just really good at it and others aren't. And what is maybe the most like viscerally tough and old school display of just my strength versus your strength.
Me push harder than you.
Yeah. It's boring, but I don't feel like banning something just because it's boring but effective.
Oh, see, I'm totally rooting for it to get banned because it's boring. I'm a fan, so I don't care about fairness. I care about wanting to watch the play.
This is where I get to toe the line. I get to hope that it gets banned, but be furious on the grounds that they banned it.
Oh, yes. That's the sweet spot right there.
Because I really don't want to watch it, but I also don't want, and I don't want to be part of like arguing for you to ban something just because it's boring.
Yeah.
And yet, here we are.
I'm rooting for it to get banned. Florio had a hilarious correlation last week. Remember last week, Seth, before the schedule came out, where like 12 games had been leaked and like four or five of them were Eagles games? Like, it was crazy. Like, a third of the Eagles schedule was out there already before the overall schedule release, and they were all primetime games. Florio's theory is that, oh, yeah, the tush push is definitely getting banned because the Eagles are the ones that use it more than anybody else.
Yeah.
Why else would they put the Eagles on all these primetime games if they were still going to be using the tush push, the most unwatchable play? And I felt like going, because they're the Super Bowl champs. You know?
Yeah.
Florio.
I don't know if they're giving the schedule makers the inside information on how guys are probably going to vote.
Vote on the tush push. Yeah. Now, I will say this. It does seem like all the insiders that talk about this are in lockstep that they all say Goodell wants it banned. If Goodell doesn't want the tush push
Goodell,
anymore.
And it makes sense from a business perspective in just everything that Florio just said. It's a boring play, and it's not fun to watch or anything. So I could see Goodell wanting it banned.
Text message about the divisional thing. My worry is that divisions in the NFL become like you just said in basketball. There used to be more division rivalry in basketball. Once they changed the seating, it really fell off. I think football to me is a much more visceral, violent sport where that's going to help sustain the rivalries, I think.
Well, plus the number of games you play, there's a much bigger difference. You play twice as many games versus your divisional opponents in football than you do in basketball, where it's way more evened out. So that part of it, there's a lot of reasons the divisions don't feel as important in basketball.
Yep. So there you go. All right, 713-572-4610. If you want to weigh in on any of that, are you pro tush push, anti tush push? You pro doing the seeding this way in the playoffs? These are the important items that are going to get voted on at the league meetings this week. Joe in Minnesota. We have a listener in Minnesota, Joe. False. Don't let spring in Minnesota fool you. We have like three nice weeks a year. It's currently 45 and windy. Temperature feels like 30 on the Apple Weather app. Oh, I take it all back, owners. You guys are 32 pretty tough SOBs headed up to Minnesota for that 45-degree weather. Feels like 30. You guys are, man, sorry. Didn't mean to throw that shade at you. There's a graphic that popped up on Twitter this weekend. Each team's biggest bust in the draft. I love stuff like this. Is David Carr the right answer for the Houston Texans as their biggest bust? That's who they had. Now, this is on a graphic that has names like Jamarcus Russell for the Raiders, Johnny Manziel for the Browns, Charles Rogers. I always think about teams like that, like your biggest bust. Who is the next guy taken? Oh, nothing. The Texans just took Andre Johnson next after Charles Rogers. Could add Andre Johnson. Ray Carruth, I feel like, is in a totally different category for why he was a bust.
Yeah, it's a different type of bust, but a bust nonetheless, I suppose.
Yeah.
I guess I think David Carr makes the most sense.
Yeah.
He was a number one overall pick. It was part of an ill-begotten strategy of starting six rookies on offense in your rookie quarterback's year. It's hard to come up with a better. Like, Jadeveon Clowney ultimately wasn't what you wanted to get out of a number one overall
not
pick,
a bust,
but he was a very, very good player.
Yeah, not a bust. Didn't live up to expectations, but not a bust for sure.
Just to real quick sum up, just so that to answer that listener about the NFL division. Oh, yeah. So, like, the NBA plays 12 out of its 86 games against divisional opponents.
82
games. Yeah. The NFL, you're playing 6 out of 17.
Yeah, almost.
So it ends up being like 35% of your games are against divisional opponents. Yep. That's just why it feels different in the NFL.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I had to go. I didn't think the first round busts were as interesting, so I went to second round busts.
For the Texans?
And it was easier than I thought it would be to come up with three candidates. And it's really, Ross Blacklock, Brandon Harris, and Benny Joppru.
Okay.
Those three combined had a weighted average value on Pro Football Reference of 3 points.
That's bad, yeah.
Two of them had zero. So Ross Blacklock played played 44 games in the NFL, 29 with the Texans.
Yeah.
Brandon Harris would play 31 games, 42 games in the NFL, 31 with the Texans.
Okay.
Benny Ja'Pru played in 19 games and only one with the Texans in 4 years.
Who are
the
other two? So Benny Ja'Pru actually clocked 18 other games somewhere else, huh?
Yeah. Wow. I think he went to San Francisco. I don't know where he went.
I'll look it
up.
He went
somewhere on the West Coast.
Yeah, I'll look it up.
And I feel bad because Benny, it was injuries. He had like these weird injuries every single year.
He was the only one of those that was a teammate of yours. So yeah.
He looked awesome in practice. He
did
some incredible stuff in practice. Yeah, and he is still a good dude, but he was a great kid. I always felt really bad for him. But I feel like I got to give it to Benny just by virtue of him contributing so little to the Texans at all.
Seattle. He went to Seattle after he left here. Went to Seattle. And
I felt like I should have thrown Lonnie Johnson into the mix, but he did play 44 games with the Texans and actually started 20 games for the Texans, 20 career starts.
Okay.
I can't remember how many were the
Texans. He's honorable mention bust?
Yeah, I guess part of it was just they drafted him to be a cornerback, and they realized real quickly, like, oh, wait a second. Oh, yeah, duh, look at him. He's a safety.
Dude, that was, oh.
But they tried him at cornerback for a couple of years before they gave up on it.
Back-to-back, Lonnie Johnson and Max Sharping. Back-to-back. Back in 2019.
Sharping was a third rounder, right?
No, he was second round. He and Lonnie Johnson were literally picked on back-to-back selections in 2019.
You know what? I didn't even scroll down long enough to see the Max Sharping.
Am I right about that? They had two second-round picks, and one of them was Max Sharping, and one of them was Lonnie Johnson. They chose them in back-to-back picks.
I wouldn't put Sharping in that top three. Lonnie wasn't in the top three either.
Yeah.
Max Sharping did end up starting for the Texans 25-32 games. So, yeah, that's it was disappointing, but it wasn't like he didn't at least, you know, contribute in some way.
Yeah, he played a bunch of games for sure. They gave him every opportunity, but yeah. Oh. I think
Harris was frustrating because it felt like they stuck with him specifically because he was a second round pick for far longer than they should have.
Brandon Harris was frustrating because his.
I've never felt like this before. It's like you just get me. I feel like my true self with you. Does that sound crazy? And it doesn't hurt that you're gorgeous. Okay, that's it. I'm taking you home with me. I mean, you can't find shoes this good just anywhere. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history podcast created by me, Professor Greg Jackson. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Self-given nickname was No Fly Zone, when in fact there were planes flying all over his zone. The planes are just flying freely through his zone. It was not a no-fly zone.
Ross Blacklock started three games with the Texans, and he had three career starts. The thing that Ross Blacklock almost superseded the stats with was that was during the Easterby era when the team issued a document saying that the second-round pick that the Texans got from DeAndre Hopkins would be used on a player who would be very good for a long time with the Texans.
Yeah.
And also in that same document pointed out how many great wide receivers have gone in the second round as of late. So they didn't go with a wide receiver. They took a defensive tackle instead. He played 29 games with the Texans with three starts to go along with his three career stats.
You and I read the bullet points from that document like once a year. And it just gets worse every year we read it. It gets so silly every year we read it. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Speaking of the Texans, Will Anderson asked about the new look O-line. Will Anderson was asked about two position groups that I think maybe you need to finesse your answers for this. I think Will did a pretty good job. New look offensive line, his teammates at defensive tackle was asked about both of these groups in an interview he did last week. How did he do? What does he think? We'll hear from Will Anderson coming up next. All right, football training camp will be here soon enough. OTA is in about a week and a half for the Houston Texans. Will Anderson made the interview rounds over last week, and some of the interviews still popping up on social media over the weekend. I love this one here. This is just the kumbaya with Will Anderson and the Texans and D'Amico Ryans when you contrast it to Trey Hendrickson, who's getting texts from his head coach saying, you better show up or you're going to get fined.
Yeah.
It is kind of fun to see the contrast with where the Texans are as far as just the culture and a vibe with some of the other teams. Here's Will Anderson on playing for D'Amico Ryans.
I thank God all the time for the situation that he dropped me in, man. There's no other coach that I'd rather play for than him. I think he set a really great example of what he wanted this team to be, and he gave us a foundation to lean back on when, you know, either when things are not going our way or when things are going our way. Like the swarm mentality and the swarm, you know, foundation that he's built in, you know, the Houston Texans has really been special. But he's a player's coach. He gets it. He understands it, man. And he gets out there. He runs with us. He works out with us, man. And he's enthusiastic about when we make plays. He's jumping up and down with us. And I can tell he wants to put those shoulder pads back on and get out there with us again, man. But it's so easy to play for him because I understand his mindset of what he wants this team to be and the vision that he has for us and how much, you know, better he wants us to be and how much he sees us, you know, getting to that level.
So there's Will Anderson, yeah.
Yeah, all that, obviously, none of that comes as a surprise. I think the thing with D'Amico, my big question for him is, remember last year when Tank Dell very jovially said that, you know, when asked if there's anything that he didn't like about D'Amico, Tank said, man, he really wants the defense to win all the time.
Oh, yeah, practice. I forgot about
like,
that.
If the defense has a good practice, he'll round everybody up and he'll say, great practice, everybody. Yeah. If the offense has a good practice, all of a sudden it's a bad practice for everybody. He does have to, in that transition to being a genuine head coach who oversees everything, I think emotionally divorce himself from the defense a little bit at times. It's not like it's a huge deal or anything, but I don't know. Some of that stuff...
But if it's palpable, guys notice it.
Sometimes you hit some adversity, and sometimes that stuff doesn't weather as well.
Yeah, man. If guys notice it, so yeah. I said this earlier when we played that cut. It's just, and it was cool. Like when Will Anderson got drafted, it was really cool to hear him say pretty much what he just said there. Now, obviously, he's got 2 years of experience playing with D'Amico, and that was more about what's it like to be on his team. When he got drafted, it was more like, what's it feel like to get drafted by this guy and potentially play on his team or eventually play on his team? And Will was over the moon about that. That was just cool. That, to me, that cuts like a reminder of when Will got drafted, where it's like, holy crap, good players want to come here now that D'Amico's here. Like, guys, yeah. this guy wanted, of all the places he's going, he wanted to come to Houston. That was cool.
The animated, and this is nothing that D'Amico would ever do consciously or anything, but I think there is a real benefit to it, is that D'Amico pops on television.
Yeah.
I think there are guys like Trey Hendrickson, and Trey Hendrickson isn't going to end up in Houston. That would be a dumb trade just because they've already got too many guys to rotate in at the edge at times. If a guy like Trey Hendrickson had his wishes, if money were no issue or anything, and I want to get traded somewhere, I think Houston's one of those places.
Absolutely. So
for defensive players, you watch the Texans defense play, and man, like, they have fun. The coach is psychotic on the sidelines in a good way, and they hit. Like, they're, like CJ Gardner-Johnson said when he got here, like, they put an advertisement out there for what type of team it is to play for, and then they get really good word of mouth from guys at the Pro Bowl and whatnot about all of that. It's very much a player-friendly environment, and I think guys, if they have to make a decision or if maybe they've got equal offers from different places, the Texans very much now are in that category of, yeah, I want to go and be a part of I want to be one of the guys that helps put this team over.
Do you ever?
As opposed to like, oh, I guess I'll get my paycheck with the Bengals, I guess.
Do you, like, as a former player, do you ever think about what it would have been like to play for D'Amico Ryans or play for a coach like that? With how much you would have liked to play for him?
Yeah, that would have been, because I never really had anybody quite like that. Yeah. I mean, there's not that many coaches that are wired like D'Amico or Pete Carroll or guys like that. I told you, even when Kubiak came in, because I'd had old school NFL coaches like Tom Coughlin And Capers wasn't a yeller or a screamer, but he was just more old traditional NFL coach. The relentless positivity, or even just, I would say, the laid back nature of Kubiak, because Kubiak could get after guys like nobody, but he was way more laid back. It took me a while to actually accept it. I thought it was a ruse at first. I thought I was being set up for something.
I could see that. Yeah.
I was like Mel Gibson in Braveheart. Like, I smell an ambush coming. Yeah, yep. He told me, Kubiak told me that I could have, I didn't have to practice twice a day because I was over 30.
It's a trap.
And I was like, no, coach. I was like, yeah, I thought for sure it was a trap. So I practiced 2 days, though I was over 30. I was like, nope. I'm practicing,
that's
coach.
Funny.
I don't need any time off. I'm fine.
That's great. Here's Will Anderson on the new look Texans offensive line.
I'm very excited, man. Those guys are a great group of guys, man. They love ball. They love attacking the day. And I'm just happy to, see the camaraderie on that side, man. I know they're going to do everything the right way, man. They love ball. And I can't wait to, if we get in the huddle before the game and either Titus or me or Tim, one of us going to give the pregame speech and we just get everybody hyped, man. And it just starts up front with the trenches and, it starts in practice competing and having fun going against each other.
Okay. There you go.
As far as the pregame speech, we joked about that a little bit earlier. Like, if I had to choose between Will Anderson or Titus Howard, I'm guessing that I want a Will Anderson pregame speech.
I think so. I mean, we're playing audio of him in the middle of May just because he's Will Anderson. I would think he gives a great speech. Yeah.
At the same time, he was asked a question about the offensive line. And if he's thinking, and if in his mind he's thinking about, give the pregame speech, whether it's me or one of these offensive linemen, that's the only guy that's been on the team that has any kind of veteran status. It's Titus Howard.
Yeah.
I mean, Cam Robinson has more experience and Trent Brown has more experience, but Lakin Tomlinson, they're new to the team.
They haven't been through the muck like Titus has, man. He was here for the bad times. Yeah. So it's a little more connected.
Titus has been here through how many GMs? Brian Gain drafted?
Drafted by Brian Gain. So then he was here for GM William O'Brien, Esquire.
Yeah.
Interim general manager Jack Easterby. And now, Nick has provided some stability in that spot.
Since Easterby is basically a co-GM, call it four general managers.
Yeah, about that.
Four general managers and four coaches.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, O'Brien, Cully, Lovey, and now D'Amico. Man, it's nice. It is nice not going through these searches every year the last few years. That was a thing for 3 years in a row. Like, all right, well, let's see here. What's your approval rating on Eric Bieniemy, Texan fans? Huh? All right, last one here. Here's Will Anderson on the perceived weakness of his teammates along the defensive line at defensive tackle.
Yeah, I have all the confidence in the world. I don't think it's any weak spots in our D-line, man. I think we're all alpha dogs. I think we all get out there and attack and cause havoc and disrupt. And we got my guy Sheldon Rankins back. He was a great mentor for me my rookie year. I'm excited to be back with him. And we got Big Foley back. Yep. He was a big piece. We call him the big dog. And Tim Settle, Tommy, like Kurt, all those guys. And, I think our biggest thing is when we all play together, we all play as one sound. We can be one of the top defensive lines in the league, and we just have to keep, doing that and keep doing it consistently.
I'm cool with this group.
Look, you're never going to have 11 all pros on defense. And I think as a group and as a unit, the pass rush was really good last year. The run defense got better in key areas as they went along. And I think part of that, some of the tweaks that D'Amico made to the way they were operating on defense. I'm more concerned at this point about the pass coverage of the linebackers than I am about the defensive tackle position. Mm-hmm. And so again, you can't have 11 all pros. It's not like the Rams back when they had four future Hall of Fame guys on defense.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen very often. At the money positions at edge rusher and at cornerback, you feel really good
top
about.
Shelf,
like
yes.
You've got the future, like that's very, very good. And then it's about filling in the blanks. And yes, they could be even better if they had a genuine, Pro Bowl caliber defensive tackle in there. But it's not a necessity. They can still be a very good defense without it.
Yep. Someone said, watch the video last night about every team's draft bust. Ours was David Carr. Yeah, we're getting a few people sending in some names about the draft bust for the Texans.
The other guy, it's tough because, I mean, Rick Smith did really well drafting in the first round, by and large. And
yeah, really well. Really
yeah,
well.
Now Casserly drafted Travis Johnson, but he went 16th.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history podcast created by me, Professor Greg Jackson. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Overall, Rick Smith drafted Emobi Okoye. He went 10th overall, I believe.
Yes.
And then beyond that, they had, because the Texans have had, you know, without an extreme playoff success, they've had a lot of winning seasons. They haven't drafted high all that well, and when they have drafted high, they've done pretty well with it. So I might have to put Okoye ended up being a starter for 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't, he wasn't in that bust category. And Travis was just right there at the very last pick in the first half of the first round.
Yep.
But the fact that Carr was number one overall, I think makes it the slam
that hurts, and it's a quarterback, and it's you know like that's that the rules are amplified at that position. Who was the
plus
first?
You know, with Travis, because I was there and I saw it.
Yeah.
One of the things with Travis what was odd was he wasn't really a fit for the defense.
Yeah,
and I always felt bad for Travis. Travis came from the school at Florida State where they just play a lot like D'Amico likes to play, just get upfield and go. And then all of a sudden, Travis comes in and he's just a different. He was best in that type of defense. He comes into a 3-4 defense where they want him to read and react and everything, and it was a really hard transition.
Maybe that's why he lashed out and had so many fines in the preseason that year. You ever hear him tell that story about his first check that he ever got in the NFL was like $83? Because he got fined like multiple times in the preseason?
For stuff like rookie-type stuff, yeah. Travis was always a personality. He was funny.
Yeah. He tells his story obviously way better than I do. But
Travis will own it. Like, it's not like we're banging on him.
No. If he were sitting here, he'd tell the story in 2 seconds, I'm sure. But yeah, like you guys get your pay gets spread out over the regular season. You don't get any pay in the preseason, so they had to take all his fines from the preseason and apply it to his first check.
It wasn't like anything egregious or anything. It was stuff like just being a little bit late for a meeting or missing a weigh-in or something like that.
Yeah. So, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, final segment coming up. We're down to the conference finals in the NBA. Rockets are not hanging around anymore. We know that. Is there anything we can take away? What is our rooting interest supposed to be here for what is going to be, in one way, an historic NBA postseason? We'll explain how coming up next. All right, so for the first time in NBA history, there will be 7 different champions in 7 years in the NBA, which sounds crazy because it doesn't feel like we're that far removed from the Golden State Warriors winning multiple championships, but I guess so. 7 different championships in 7 years. There's only been one Golden State champion in that last 7 years. It was in 2022, so I'll be very anxious, Seth, to see if these conference finals and the NBA finals continue the trend of what we've been seeing in sports, which is viewership is up in almost every sport right now. Like literally, it feels like every single big event since the NFL regular season, you and I, when the ratings come out and it's in headlines, we were like, this is the most watched whatever it is. This is the most watched Preakness Stakes. Well, since 2021, you know?
I think for a while there, the NBA is kind of careening on this towards this path of they were way more relevant on social media than they were on actual eyeballs watching the league. Mm. And ultimately, yes, they do a great job of creating stars, and the NBA players have a whole bunch of individual star power. But really what drives interest and engagement nationwide is when you feel like your team has a shot at it, or when the underdog has a shot at something. Like, those are the things that really, the logos really do matter still.
Yeah.
And I think whether people in a poll say they like this version of the NBA or not, I think it's a more interesting league.
Yeah.
When you feel like more teams have a genuine shot, and you just can't just put together your super team this year, and then they're just going to get coronated at the end of the year. That part of it I like. I like personally is somebody that can either – I can either just walk away from the NBA completely or I can dive into it. This version of the NBA is a lot more fun to watch.
It's more fun to watch. As a Rockets fan, I'm looking at the four teams left, and I'm like, they can play with these teams, man. I know OKC won 68 games. They went 68-14. A couple of those 14 losses were to the Rockets, you know, like they, you know, Minnesota, a 6 seed, OKC, obviously a 1 seed, and then you got a 4 and a 3 seed in Indiana and the Knicks over in the East. It's like, man, they can play with these teams. Like they're close.
Yeah. If you're a team that it's exactly like a lot of Houstonians almost, you maintain an interest in it when you feel like, oh, wow, all right, let's measure up against these teams. And you know what? Okay, that goal isn't as far off or as unattainable as it might feel in other years or when there is a dynasty going on. Dynasties are great for sports writers. I think they're awful for fans. Mm-hmm. I think sports writers just love to be able to write about dynasties or people on ESPN or what have you. Remember everybody chiding us that we should be appreciating how great the Chiefs are? Don't you appreciate that you're witnessing great? Go die. I don't want to be.
Nate Burleson, that was for you,
I don't want. Oh, wow. Boy, I love just being cuckolded every single year. Yes, this is what I love. What kind of low self-esteem BS is that?
You know what?
Just sit back and enjoy how somebody is so much better than you.
Hey, real quick, I was thinking about this the other day. We didn't start doing Take-A-Mania until February. There are at least two takes that we need to throw into our end of year thing that predate Take-A-Mania. One is Rex Ryan saying that the Chargers got a bye week. Remember that? And then the other one is the one you're alluding to here with Nate Burleson telling us how we should be watching sports.
Right.
Yeah.
You appreciate the greatness of what you're watching. That was another big annoying thing on Radio Row was how many people were so eager to basically talk about how incredible it is that the Chiefs are going to have a three-peat. Like, they almost said it like that. Yeah. They would couch it a little bit.
Yeah.
But it was almost like it was preordained that, yes, they will be a three-peat.
It was not.
And they're the greatest team that's
turns out.
Well, no, it wasn't even a game.
Yeah.
It wasn't even a game.
Do that thing like we did earlier with Windhorse. Few moments later, the Eagles are sacking him 9 times or whatever.
I appreciate how incredible their run has been.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can't help but acknowledge how impressive it's been. The fact that they didn't do it 3 times in a row doesn't change the run that they've been on, but my God.
Yep. All right. My rooting interest, by the way, I'm rooting against fan bases and Adam Silver, which means I'm rooting for Indiana to beat the Knicks. The Knicks fan base just seems like a group of horrible, horrible people. And then I'm rooting for Minnesota to beat OKC. One, because I can't root for OKC. And two, I feel like an Indiana-Minnesota final is like Adam Silver's worst nightmare, just based on market size. Indianapolis and Minneapolis, like I want Adam Silver to be like sweating over the TV ratings and whatnot in the finals, but you can't anything but the Knicks, honestly. Any of these teams but the Knicks, please. Larry is in Stafford. What's going on, Larry? How are you?
Hey, I'm good, son. Seth, again, son, we are definitely brothers from another mother, man, because I'm going Minnesota and Indianapolis too, man, because not only do I hate the Knicks, but OKC fans are just – I can't even stomach those people in Oklahoma, man, because they are just so arrogant and SGA and all this other. I hope their ass get run off the court by Ant-Man, man. But look, I wanted to touch on some things real quick, and I'll make it fast. Of course everybody want to play for D'Amico Ryans and Frank Ross, man. That kind of energy and that kind of positivity, we got to remember, man, nobody wants to play for Bill O'Brien and David Culley standing on the sideline chewing his tongue and all that other stuff. Now you got a coach over there that's enthusiastic and let them boys hit like you're supposed to hit in football. I think half the defensive players in NFL want to play for D'Amico because D'Amico plays football like he played football or he coaches football like he played football. So I'm all for that. Last thing before I let y'all go. Are we living in a universe where y'all actually think that Coleridge C.J. Stroud is not going to get $60 million? Let me explain the logistics to you guys about this. C.J. is 23 years old. So if they give him a 5-year deal, he's going to be 28 when that deal is done. So he's going to get right at $60 million. So when he's 28 when that deal is done or 29 when that deal is done, Breaking news. The Houston Texans ass are going to want a $2 billion stadium. You think they want to go into a season without a franchise quarterback trying to get us a new stadium? Hell no. They're going to give CJ two more contracts. And I don't, if y'all convincing yourself, and not you guys, but anybody out there that think Brock Purdy should get $53 million and CJ Stroud should only get $55 million, y'all ass need to come drink some yak with your boy, because CJ is a better quarterback, and we know damn well he's going to try to get us to the Super Bowl this year. And I don't care if he throw 20 touchdowns, his ass going to get paid, and y'all might as well get ready for it, because Nick understand the game and aha.
Yeah, no, he's going to get paid. He's going to get paid. We'll, you know, we'll see. He's got to have a – if he has a year like he had his rookie year, if he has the exact same season he had his rookie year, you know, 23 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, got sacked a bunch of times, they won 10 games, is that good enough to get the big – like, is that – will he get – upwards of $55 million if he has the same season he had his rookie year.
I think so, yeah. Just because that's the trend, and that's what quarterbacks get these days, as long as there's no injury concerns or what have you. You know, Brock Purdy is an interesting one, where I think the difference between how the 49ers probably feel about Brock Purdy and whether he's a product of the system or not is a lot different than maybe what the Texans feel about CJ Stroud and perhaps the rest of the league.
Yeah.
And I'm a little bit of a Brock Purdy. Like, I probably defend Brock Purdy more than the average person, but I still don't. If I try to be as objective as possible, I think CJ's ceiling is way higher.
Sure.
So I think the biggest part, whether looking at touchdowns and interceptions or whatnot, put all that aside, I think the biggest thing is just whether if they can keep him clean and he actually gets good pass protection,
yeah.
I think that's the only thing you have to talk about. Yeah. If they keep him clean and he's not one of the most sacked or harassed quarterbacks in the league, I think he's going to have a much better season. The one thing, the alarming stats when you look at last year were how often CJ was in second and long situations and third and long situations. And the same bad offensive line that helped get him into second and 10 and third and 10 was the one that was responsible for also protecting him on second and 10 and third and 10.
Yep.
That is a really, really rough recipe. And we go back to the old stat of, hey, Pat Mahomes, the percentage of times he was pressured in that Super Bowl game where he was awful, that's the average. That was lower than what CJ Stroud saw on average.
Yes.
So it's just really hard to be a really good quarterback consistently when your pass protection and your run game, when you're running on the first down, and I'm not doing the old, you got to have a good run game to set up the pass. No, when your run game's so bad that you're routinely in second and 10 or third and 10 because you've sacrificed two wasted downs to the run gods, like, it's really hard to play good quarterback that way.
There was a tweet I saw yesterday, and I should have bookmarked it. I mean, we could have made a topic out of it with what we're talking about right now, but it was the numbers to back up what you were just saying about CJ Stroud, where no quarterback was in third and longer than 7 more than CJ Stroud was last year. He was pressured immensely on those downs, the number of hits, the number of sacks he was taking. And yet in that situation, he was 13th in expected points added per dropback or whatever the efficiency rating was. Like, he was above middle of the pack in terms of how productive he was in an adverse situation that he was in more than any other quarterback in the league, and got hit more than any other quarterback in the league. You know,
yeah.
It's just that's why it's so frustrating for me when people point the finger at CJ Stroud, like he had some major regression this past year. There were certainly areas that he can improve upon and areas that things he didn't do as well maybe he did his rookie year, but man, you're absolutely right. Just keep the guy upright. Like, the numbers are there. When he's got a clean pocket, he's an assassin, you know?
Yeah. Well, you look at, like Pat Mahomes statistically this year, you know, it was not nearly one of his best seasons. What the Chiefs were really good at was getting him into third and 5.
Dinking and dunking,
four.
Man. Yeah.
Yeah, they did a really good job with that. And then they, you know, and I'm not trying to take anything away from Pat Mahomes or anything. That's what their offense has been for a couple of years now, but last year especially, get him into manageable situations, and then your team's going to have success. CJ just was not in manageable situations last year.
Text message also, Purdy's been to the Super Bowl twice. He's only been once. He's been to one Super Bowl. It was in the 2023 season. The other, his rookie year was the year where his arm got like his the bottom part of his arm basically almost got ripped off of his body because of he got hit on a follow through.
Yeah, he was playing the stranger with the football on that. He couldn't feel his hand, right?
Yes. The NFC title game against the Eagles. The Eagles went to the Super Bowl that year. That was Purdy's rookie year. And then they went 6-11 last year. So I mean Purdy is an interesting one, man. Him getting $53 million I'm not shocked by it at all, but it's going to be fascinating to watch that play out. It's not going to be as easy to surround him with all those pieces anymore.
Well, the old myth of the rookie quarterback contract, too, is like it hasn't matched up with what you hope. Everybody always thinks, oh, you got this rookie quarterback so you can load up. And the 49ers did do that. They loaded up, and they got to the Super Bowl with
it.
Yeah. But it's only since Tom Brady, I think Pat Mahomes is still the only guy that's won a Super Bowl on his rookie contract.
Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson was on his rookie
deal. Russell Wilson.
Yeah, okay. Russell Wilson. But again,
he doesn't count. The defense won that. Their defense won that Super Bowl.
He should have won a second one if they just hand the ball off. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Reggie Atatula is back. John Lopez is here.
Howdy.
What's up? Yo.
How we doing?
Terrific.
Did you have a good weekend?
Great weekend.
All right, good weekend. You, yeah. Reggie?
On paper, it should have been a good weekend. Right now, my ribs hurt, my elbow hurts.
What happened?
Nothing that should cause my ribs and my elbow to hurt.
Yeah. Weird.
I don't know.
You look like you're in good shape.
I think I'm getting old. And you know what? Also, and I'm sure Seth can back me up on this, like the more that you're in good shape and you try and maintain yourself being in good shape, somehow you end up hurting. Like I did a thing, which I would never typically do, which is move a workout because I was not going to be able to do it on the day typically. Mm-hmm. Usually it's like, this is when the workout schedule. If I can't do it, skip it.
Yeah.
And I was like, nah, I will get into my workout ahead of time. And it's been nothing but pain ever since.
Okay.
You pitched on 4 days rest.
Yeah.
You got to watch it with that, man.
And now I'm worried about, you know, inflammation and UCL injuries. Like, that's where I'm at right now.
Okay.
You know how you make up for it, Reginald? I'm going the Lopez route. See, one less button on my shirt.
Nice.
Caliente.
I see it.
I didn't do that intentionally.
leave it. Yeah, leave it.
I don't want to break up any marriages. Female viewership on the YouTube stream.
Female viewership on the YouTube just spiked. Yeah. Yes. So what's the question of the day, boys?
All right. So you heard when Paredes hit that home run?
Yes.
Like a home game.
Oh, it was loud.
It was loud. A lot of Astros fans there. So the old family text gets going on stuff like this.
Okay.
And we started asking each other, what is the best sound in sports?
Okay. So in that case, it was the sound of the crowd in an opposing park cheering. Okay.
Yeah. So, just to kind of get you thinking a little bit, I put a couple in the old group text.
Yeah.
One of them is going to be this weekend. After they say, gentlemen, start your engines in Indianapolis, when you hear all 33 cars.
Oh, that is badass.
All at once, start revving and pumping the engines. And also, I put the sound of a golf ball hitting the bottom of a cup on a
little click sound that it makes.
Yeah.
I see. I like it off the club.
Sweet.
Yeah.
When they hit it,
I'm more
pure,
about the beginning. Yeah.
When they hit it pure, as they say.
I'll tell you what. To me, ironically, thinking about this, one of my favorite sounds in sports is no sound at all. I like it when a road crowd gets
silenced. Man.
Yeah.
Stunned silence from a road player hitting a home run. Basketball is the best one.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, the last second shot. You know,
Jacob, my oldest son, who, as you know, was a big time swimmer.
Yeah.
He said the best sound is similar. He says the best sound is after they say, take your mark in swimming. And it's just dead silent.
And you're waiting for the gun to go off.
Yeah, just dead silent.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, I'm always interested also how much that changes from spectator to competitor. You know what I mean?
Like he said that's his favorite thing.
Right. Yeah. What was it from
like
field level?
Hear his heart beating, you know, and all that stuff.
Like from a field, like a goal line stand is just, there's nothing like that.
Yeah.
A goal line, on a successful goal line stand
pop.
At home,
yeah.
That really just, there's nothing like it. Like, you've never experienced something that loud or just that it feels like you're just enveloped by just the combined energy of the stadium. That part's really cool. And then, almost the completely opposite direction, I would say I really just love listening anytime a basketball is talking. During a shoot around or something, I just like hearing the squeak of the shoes.
That one made the list.
Just, takes you back to high school. Yeah. You know, like it just feels like, oh yeah, you're in a gym and you hear a bunch of squeaking and there's guys practicing in the background. Yeah. I like that.
That's a good one. Okay, I'll give you an underrated one nowadays because everything is so mic'd up.
Mm-hmm.
A ball hitting off the upright at a
the doink.
Oh, yeah, the doink.
Boink. The doink is a loud
Why didn't
noise,
I think of that?
Loud
That's a good
now,
one,
too, because
yeah.
the microphones.
But you're right. That is, and especially when you still can't quite figure out whether it's gone in or
yeah,
out
yeah,
or whether
yeah.
it's going
yeah, did
in.
It
yeah.
go, right, did it doink and go through?
That is
what?
A good one.
yeah.
In a similar fashion, some of these like NBA gyms, they will have the rim mic'd and maybe too loud. So hearing a miss where it sounds just like a bomb went off
yeah,
is always,
yeah.
it's very Schadenfreude to feel it. Like, it's yeah. just like, ah, yeah, you missed that.
The swish
yeah.
is good too, though. The,
yep.
the
oh,
swish.
Yeah.
That's
yep.
really nice.
Mm-hmm.
A body going through a table at a WWE match. Very good. The crunch.
The crunch of
Go
the table.
Go watch Mick Foley get thrown yeah. off the top of a cage, man, and hear what that sounds like. Oh, by the way, the greatest sound is Crosstalk, brought to you by D&M
yes.
Auto Lease.
Always.
Yes. Indeed.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Well, all right, fellas. Have a great show.
Thanks, man.
This is at 10:40 today. This is the onomatopoeia segment,
yes.
right?
Yeah. Yes.
I like that.
It's a great word.
You don't get to use it very often. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies and all the thwunks you can handle, too.
I'm going thwunking today. Indeed. All right, we're done. We're out of time. Crosstalk again, brought to you by D&M Auto Leasing. You're listening to KLT AM, KLT FM. HD2 Houston, an Odyssey sports station.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history podcast created by me, Professor Greg Jackson. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.